From WTIP News, this is the North Shore Weekend News Roundup. I'm Kara Thomas.
I'm Jay Anderson.
And I'm Barbara Jean Johnson. And here are some of the stories we're following this week. The body of a 19-year-old Cook County graduate who recently left the North Shore and moved in with his older brother in Colorado ski country has been found. Authorities recovered the body of snowboarder Jasper Jazz McGrath Thursday afternoon in an out-of-bounds area near the Blue Sky Basin area of Vail Mountain. McGrath died of suffocation from an avalanche, Eagle County Coroner Kara Bettis said. Jasper McGrath's brother, Joe McGrath, reported him missing last Sunday when he realized he hadn't seen or heard from him since the previous Wednesday, January 6th. Jasper McGrath had been staying with his brother for about 2 months and was last seen leaving the West Vail home on his way to go snowboarding that day. Bettis said she presumes McGrath died January 6 because that's when he was last seen. Officials estimate McGrath was buried under 3.5 feet of snow. The Colorado Avalanche Information Center's website said McGrath likely triggered the avalanche himself. Two skiers notified Vail Ski Patrol on Thursday that they had spotted a body near Miller Cliffs, an out-of-bounds area about half a mile west of the Vail Mountain ski area boundary. Vail Mountain closed two lifts in the Blue Sky Basin area during the recovery.
The Cook County Grand Marais Joint Economic Authority, or EDA, continues to face cash flow problems. Payment of most bills is on hold right now, and no substantial income to pay operating expenses can be expected until the EDA receives half of its annual levy in June of this year. Also on hold is Director Matt Gerritschlager's paycheck. But Gerritschlager said that funds from the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED, awarded for damages sustained at Cedar Grove Business Park during the June 2008 rainstorm should arrive soon. The expected payment of $114,000 includes money designated for administrative costs and can be used to help pay Gerritschlager's salary. The EDA director's yearly compensation package totals $61,000. The EDA is also overdue on loan repayments of $100,000 each to the city of Grand Marais and Cook County. Both loans were made to Superior National Golf Course, which is owned by the EDA. The payments were due in October of 2009. The EDA will receive a $100,000 reimbursement from Iron Range Resources for cart path improvements at Superior National later this month. That money is earmarked to pay back the city of Grand Marais. Cook County will continue to wait for payment. The matter is expected to be discussed at a county board meeting in February.
The United States currently imports upwards of 80% of its palladium platinum, over 80% of its cobalt, 60% of its nickel, and 40% of its copper. That's why PolyMet says it wants to open a mine north of Hoyt Lakes at the east end of the Mesabi Iron Range in St. Louis County. According to Brad Moore, a senior advisor at Barr Engineering, a consulting firm to PolyMet Mining, the Duluth Complex Formation is estimated to rank very high as a world-class source for these metals. Moore gave a PowerPoint overview and status report on the PolyMet open pit mine venture to Cook County Commissioners Tuesday. He said the proposed mine would annually produce 36,000 tons of copper, 7,700 tons of nickel, 360 tons of cobalt, and about 7,200 pounds of precious metals such as platinum and gold. The valuable minerals PolyMet plans to tap into are part of sulfide rock, making its type of mining different from the more commonplace taconite mining on the range. A chief concern brought forward by critics of the mining proposal centers around what happens after the sulfide rock is brought to the surface. Runoff from the rock forms sulfuric acid, which is so acidic that nothing can live in the streams or wetlands where the water flows. Moore acknowledged resistance to the new mine proposal and attempted to address concerns in his presentation. One such concern has been possible pollution of lakes in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. Moore responded.
The watershed that this proposed mine and operation flows south to Lake Superior, and it's in that watershed. The watershed, when the Boundary Waters in, flows north. So all groundwater movement and surficial waters do not flow towards the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. And in that regard, when there people are talking about impacts to the Boundary Waters related to water, that's not the case.
As for flowage to Lake Superior, Moore was a little less specific. According to PolyMet, about 3% of the excavated waste rock will have increased acidity above normal stream water levels. He said the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has stream monitors in place. He also said the affected rock will be stockpiled in such a way as to minimize drainage, and once the operation is complete, all the excavated material will be put back into the pit. A member of the public in attendance asked if it was true the open pit would be the size of 200 football fields.
With respect to the exact size, I'm not sure if it's 200 football fields, but it's a large open pit. That open pit is smaller, will be smaller than some of the current pits that are being operated by taconite companies. When the mine is closed, there will be no pits. They'll be completely filled up. And restored actually is the intent is wetlands.
Moore emphasized that the environmental impact study currently underway addresses the loss of wetlands from mining. He said mining always affects wetlands, and where the impact cannot be avoided, the plan is to replace them.
We're estimating that the impacted wetlands, that is wetlands harmed or destroyed, are approximately 854 acres. As a consequence, the amount of replacement that's detailed out in terms of plans will be 1,298 acres. So the proposed project will be replacing more wetlands than are lost.
Moore added, although there is probably 100 years of minerals available in the Duluth complex, the estimated life of the mine is 20 years, after which it will be closed and filled in.
So they're unlike the open pits you see from days gone by of mining in northern Minnesota, you know, lakes, that type of thing. This is much different.
Moore's appearance before the county board was at the same time the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources began opening new bids submitted by mining companies that want to prospect for minerals on state lands in the Northeast. The DNR acknowledged the progress PolyMet is making through the environmental review process has increased non-ferrous mining interest. For example, Vermilion Gold has submitted a bid to look for gold under state land just west of the Iron Range. Dozens of test mine shafts have already been drilled on DNR and Forest Service lands in recent years. But opponents say non-iron mining is much riskier for the region's environment because the minerals are found in rock with high sulfur content. When exposed to air and water, that rock can cause sulfuric acid runoff that can leach heavy metals into local waterways and cause problems for wildlife. On the other hand, supporters of these mines note that they would help the region's economy. The PolyMet project, for example, is projected to employ about 400 people for the life of the mine and have a $240 million economic impact on St. Louis County, according to PolyMet figures. The county board agreed by consensus to write a letter to submit during the public comment period. The board will discuss the content of the letter during its next meeting on January 19th. The meeting begins around 9:30 a.m. after the Human Services Board meeting.
U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar traveled throughout Minnesota this past week to highlight the job creation potential of energy efficiency and homegrown energy, especially with small businesses. Klobuchar is co-author of the American Renewable Energy Act, which would establish a national renewable energy standard to stimulate innovation and investment in homegrown energy. During the week, Klobuchar visited businesses and held events in 8 communities. She was in Duluth on Wednesday for a panel discussion with area businesses about export opportunities. Klobuchar says that in the current economic downturn, clean energy industries have been one of the few sectors actually creating rather than cutting jobs. She adds that small businesses are the source of much of the innovation and job creation, and she'd like to encourage more of it. Klobuchar noted that a recent national economic analysis showed that Minnesota's annual job growth during the past decade was less than 2%. But jobs related to the new energy economy grew by nearly 12% each year.
It's Snowmobile Safety Week, and a snowmobile death in Carlton County last Saturday prompted several reminders about sled safety from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Even with the Christmas snowfall, the DNR says we still have challenging trail conditions. The snow we've had so far is both a blessing and a curse, according to Les Alila, who is the DNR's Northeast Trails Manager. He says in some areas there is barely enough snow to groom. Riders can check out current Cook County snow conditions at WTIP.org. But regardless of trail conditions, there are a few reminders the DNR would like snowmobilers to keep in mind. Chief among them are speed and riding under the influence. Both were alleged factors in the Carlton County death, according to Fond du Lac Police and the Carlton County Sheriff. Other cautions to consider while riding include being prepared for emergencies, heeding trail caution and hazard signs, and avoiding traveling across bodies of water when uncertain of ice thickness. And there are many reports of slush on inland lakes.
The Cook County Local Energy Project has made an impression on the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Enough of an impression so that MPCA wants to include CCLEP in its grant to the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. For over a year, CCLEP has been concentrating on energy efficiency and energy sustainability projects. "It was a surprise to us. We didn't ask for it," CCLEP member George Wilkes told the Grand Marais City Council on Wednesday. As a part of a much larger grant application, MPCA is including $60,000 over 3 years to fund an administrator for CCLEP. Wilkes and fellow CCLEP board member Buck Benson asked the city for a letter of support for their organization. The letter will accompany MPCA's grant application. Wilkes and Benson said they only learned about the grant a few days ago, and the turnaround time for the support letter was short. Mayor Sue Hakes said she supported CCLEP's efforts, but was uncomfortable supporting something she hadn't had time to read or discuss. Wilkes said the support was for CCLEP, not the entire MPCA proposal. Councillor Jan Sievertson agreed.
So it sounds like they're trying to support the local, who's out there in the communities actually doing the work to get it out from under the MPCA, out to the community, you know, to empower communities to do this work on their own.
The council voted 3-1 in favor, with Hakes voting against. Councillor Tim Kennedy was not in attendance. A second support request from CCLEP centered on federal stimulus money through the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Wilkes said only cities and counties could apply, but a letter of intent was necessary from the city. The letter was described as a placeholder, and the city could opt out of applying if further study did not prove beneficial to the city. The grant would fund up to $100,000 of energy-efficient projects in the city. Wilkes said CCLEP could write the grant with the help of City Administrator Mike Roth. The grant deadline is short. It's due the end of the month. The grant would fund a central heating biomass feasibility study, provide energy improvements to city lighting, fund an experimental solar hot water system at the recreation park, and improve energy efficiency in city buildings. Roth said these projects have all been discussed by the city in the past.
"We don't have any of these projects that are really ready to go, except, you know, they're really picking away some of the things we've already worked on. So those are all handy things. But what I don't know is, what are we committing to? What are we telling them we're going to do? And you don't know that either, and they don't know it. Nobody's written the application yet. So if, in fact, there can be an application for the council to look at in your packet for the next meeting, I don't see any reason why we can't go to the next step here and write a letter that says we intend to apply for these things."
Council voted unanimously to support the grant application by submitting a letter of intent to the Department of Commerce.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Law Enforcement is investigating 16 incidents of wolves being killed illegally in November and December in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. 2 wolves were killed in Minnesota, 8 were killed in Wisconsin, and 6 were killed in Michigan in the last 2 months of 2009. It isn't uncommon to see a spike in the number of wolves killed in the fall, according to Greg Jackson, special agent in charge for the Midwest region of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Jackson says that as wolf-human encounters increase, outdoor enthusiasts should approach them responsibly. He added that the law applies to everyone, regardless of whether they agree or disagree with the level of protection currently afforded to wolves. The 2 wolves in northern Minnesota were killed in early November. 1 wolf was shot northwest of Grand Rapids in the Ball Club area. The 2nd was killed northwest of Two Harbors. The wolf killed near Two Harbors had been fitted with a radio tracking collar. In Wisconsin, the 8 wolves were killed in late fall in 7 counties and on 2 Native American reservations. 4 of the wolves were radio collared by the Wisconsin DNR. 6 incidents of wolves being killed were reported in Michigan's Upper Peninsula in December. All were discovered after the radio collars began emitting a mortality signal. Wolves in Michigan and Wisconsin remain endangered under the Endangered Species Act. In Minnesota, they are considered threatened. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is offering up to a $1,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of persons responsible for killing wolves. In addition, non-governmental organizations are also offering rewards. Information may be forwarded to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Law Enforcement Office. For more info, visit WTIP.org. For WTIP News, I'm Barbara Jean Johnson.
I'm Jay Anderson.
And I'm Kara Thomas.